And live from the Richard Harris Law Firm studios, it's Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Got another coaching change in the National Hockey League during this Stanley Cup playoff run, in which all 16 teams entered into the postseason tournament remain in contention for the Stanley Cup. Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace, along with Chris Chapman. Coming up, we've got our game rating, and if we get a chance, we'll open up the phone lines as well, plus Bruce Cassidy, who had an extended meeting with the media today, coming off the Game 4 overtime victory against the Minnesota Wild. Game 5, back at the Fortress tomorrow night. 6:30 start tomorrow night. It's a weekday. It's a 6:30 start. It's unusual. Plan accordingly. Make sure you're there for the big show at the start. We love to be in our seats and watch the performance. And then when the players come out and get ready and have that building rocking. So 6:30 is the face-off, the start time tomorrow night at T-Mobile Arena.
Yep, so we will be on the air tomorrow with the VGK Insider Show from 4 to 5:30. So an abbreviated show, 90-minute show. Tomorrow, 4 to 5:30 for the Insider Show, and then pregame show goes 5:30 to 6:30.
Bruce Cassidy coming up, but first let's get into our game rating from Game 4.
The Earl of Sandwich was the undisputed ruler of the sandwich world.
I give you peanut butter and banana. Bologna. Club sandwich.
Christopher.
All right. Well, backs against the wall. I thought it was a must-win game for VGK, and I thought they responded really well. I liked the early goal by Shea Theodore. I thought that the power play looked good. They needed every second of the double minor, but who cares? You scored on the power play there, so you're happy. I liked the response after the tying goal by Minnesota. I thought they didn't lose their composure. I thought the decision not to challenge by Bruce was a very good decision.
And did you go back and forth during that review?
Nope.
The way along, you were like, don't.
I watched the game the night before, and I watched the way that L.A. crumbled. I didn't think VGK would crumble, but nonetheless, it was a tying goal. There's still plenty of time left. You don't want to give Minnesota any additional ammo or help. So I thought it was a wise decision. I didn't think it was very obvious. Maybe there were angles we couldn't see that were. But I thought it was a wise decision to not challenge. So I think that's why Bruce is one of the best coaches in the league, if not the best. He doesn't make bad decisions. And I thought that was a very good decision. So for that reason, I'm going to go with a 5 out of 5 steak sandwich.
Attaboy. Wallace.
I'm going to go steak sandwich. Jack Eichel, first point of the series. Mark Stone, first point of the series. Ivan Barbashev, first point of the series. So I'll check all of those boxes. And then it's something that we've already talked about and already alluded to, but I think it's worth repeating here. The Minnesota Wild were perfect all year when leading after two periods, and the Golden Knights, not only did they come back and erase that, but they did it to tie the series when Minnesota would have been looking at their first ever 3-1 series lead in a playoff series. So to that point, it was a massive game for the Golden Knights. It was a great way to come back against a Minnesota team that has not allowed teams to come back when leading after two. So it's a steak sandwich for me.
Yeah, 5 out of 5 for me as well. Steak sandwich. Get some HP sauce in there and just spice it up a little bit. Give it some flavor kick. I was really happy for Shea Theodore to score the early goal, and it did give him some jump. I thought the blue line played really, really well during the course of that game. And then the top line, like the two top lines, it's been lopsided in the series, but that one, that game four swung it back over towards Vegas' side for the first time. Not a traditional top line the way it's set up now, but going into the series with Barbashev and Stone and Eichel, a lot of positives going through that game. And trailing 2-1 going to the third, facing a 3-1 series deficit, Vegas responded like you would expect a team to respond. Mm-hmm. That's sometimes hard to do, but They were really good, and I liked it. Now, the challenge on the Spurgeon goal or the decision to challenge or let it stand. I was back and forth. At first, I didn't think that there was any notion to challenge, but I didn't realize until I saw the overhead that Kaprizov's glove had actually interfered with Aiden Hill and pushed him back towards the far post and got his blocker, which can he could have used to reach over and make a save. I wasn't aware of that. Once I saw that, I was like, oh, there's something here. But the more you looked at it, it was the contact with Shea and Kaprizov mm-hmm. and Shea's trying to box out. And just that little add-on gives Kaprizov more latitude to be in that space and potentially interfere with the goaltender without repercussion. So as it goes, you're happy because mm-hmm. it worked out. It would have been a gutsy call. And Bruce Cassidy, he's got the final say on it, but Dave Rogowski does an unbelievable job in breaking that stuff down. And he's looking at every review over the course of the season and looks at the descriptions and the rationale for why a goal was upheld or is called back. There's homework upon homework in talking to people around the league and the league itself, and he's up on it. And that's the key part to me is Dave Rogowski and his seat in that chair, having the education and the experience to be able to make a call like that.
Yeah, and you know, you look at kind of the track record for Dave Rogowski and the Vegas Golden Knights when it comes to challenges, not just this season, but really over a larger body of work. And it's not too many scenarios where you're kind of hoping for a call. You are pretty sure about what it is you're doing. And, you know, I think that as you watched that play, as you watched more angles of it, as you watched it over and over again, it could have gone either way. It really could have. I feel like I'm leaning more on the side of, you know, that goal would have stood, and then the Golden Knights would have had to kill off a penalty because of it. So in that regard, it's a good call, but it's also a good call because the Golden Knights win the game, right? And so we don't have to worry about what could have happened if they did or didn't challenge, because they were able to come through in the end.
And give a stick tap to the National Hockey League, because when mm-hmm. the coach's challenge came in, you did not get a penalty.
Yeah.
And you were challenging if there was snow flurries outside, you were throwing the flag. Or if the music was too loud in the rink, you challenge anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And they tweaked it and went down this path where you did get a penalty if the challenge was unsuccessful. And it worked out in a sense of influencing whether or not you challenge and the risk-reward fact over the last couple of nights.
It's important to know what it is you're challenging and to feel pretty convicted that there's an issue or a problem, or that, you know, the goal should stand or the penalty shouldn't be called or whatever the case may be. So, you know, from that perspective, I'm with you. You have to put some skin in the game, so to speak, in order to make that challenge. But it just means that when you're ready to do it or you're going to do it, you feel pretty confident that what you're seeing is correct and that the call is going to go your way eventually.
And time and score and series situation, they all factor into it as well. If Vegas is up 3-1 in the series mm-hmm. and they're ahead by a couple goals, they might challenge it just to see if they can take a little bit of heat off. But where they were there, probably best case course of action, just take a step back and let your team absorb it. And that's one of the things about taking the time out. Also let the bench settle down during the course of that very stressful time period in the third period of the game four, in which the Vegas Golden Knights ended up winning 4-3. Here's Bruce Cassidy back at practice today to talk about, among other things, starting off with the absence of Alex Pietrangelo at practice.
Pietrangelo wasn't out there. Any update?
Just maintenance. He'll be ready to go tomorrow.
obviously settled on the lines that you rolled with in game four. After looking back at the film, what did you like about that group and what they were able to finish with in game
four? All the lines are, well, I mean, the overtime goal is, you know, big goal for Nick Waugh's line. I thought he was really, had good jump. He played with Smitty when Smitty first reacquired him. I liked what they brought. Barbie's played with Nick and probably Kolesar more than Smith, so he's been there. Jack and Carly were, you know, that was a little one that matchup dictated. I got two of our best centers against their top line, and they were okay with it. So we just made a move, shuffled some people around, Hurdle and Saad stayed together with Stoney on the right. So Pav then moves up. Howie lands, like I said, Howie was a little under the weather with Pearson and Kolesar is Howie. And they've played together a lot. That line's been together. I don't know how much, but you know what I mean. Like, they've been in that role, all of them. So that didn't seem to be a stretch. So we're going to stick with that at least for today. Today's over. So we'll see you tomorrow.
Bruce, hi. I want to ask you about trust. Trust in yourself, trust in your staff, and most importantly, trust between you and your players. As you factored all of that into your decisions that went into game four, how much of it has it been a cumulative thing on your part to build that trust between you and your players?
Well, it's our part, right? I mean, it's a two-way street. You know, I can't trust my whatever decisions, strategy, approaches if they don't, you know, I don't trust them to get the job done and just play hockey and not over tax them with thoughts and different things, right? So there's that you just build over time. We had a good playoff run. I mean, it's a great playoff run the first year. So it was a great way to build trust, right? You win in the end. We make some adjustments. We don't take them out of their element either. It's not, I don't think it was anything, just whatever was required, a little tweak here or there. And the lines is a little different. I think you got to talk to players, see what how they feel about that. Because sometimes they'll say, no, we can fight through this. We got it. You know, okay, you got it. Good. I'm just trying to help you out. I think that's what you do with your players that maybe it isn't going, especially the top guys. They're under a lot of scrutiny, especially playoff time. It gets, you know, under a microscope even more. So let's help them out. And if they need a change, they get a change, right? And you don't know. That's part of it. You go into the playoffs with an idea until you get, as whatever, you get punched in the face, right? And then it's on. So that's a little bit of the thought process. And I think the players do trust in us. I think we come with them a good plan. We're not coming out of left field. We explain it. It's in video. Here's why. Here's how it looks. You know, they can only answer that. But I certainly trust them to be able to adjust. I've said many times, it's a high hockey IQ bunch. I've always believed that certain adjustments offensively with the puck, you do need to walk through in practice. It's just not that easy as drawing it on a board. So that's the part that gets that you need to work through, and that's where a day like today is handy.
Along those lines, obviously Eichel's getting a lot of defensive attention, and like you said, that's kind of a compliment to him. What have your conversations been with him, and how do you think he's handling kind of fighting through that attention to try to get going?
I thought his game elevated. Game four, you could tell, like, again, second and third period, he's more vocal. You know, he's being a little more physical in the battles and that time of year. So I have no issue with Jack at all. I think he's been the victim of some bad luck in the terms of the plus-minus side. He's always been a plus player here, so I'm not going to read too much into that number. Offensively, we're trying to help many way we can to sort of, here's what we're seeing to make a few more plays, but he's had some looks and just hasn't been like his series necessarily where the pucks followed him around. And I said this before that I hate always going back, but sometimes it's relevant. It's like Jonathan Marchessault didn't score till game, went five against Winnipeg, game three, I think, in Edmonton. So you're eight games in, and the guy won the Conn Smythe. So like things can change. Like sometimes it just doesn't go your way early, and you got to help the team win, and that's what we're asking Jack. Now, yeah, he's a driver, and that's going to bother him. If if it's talked about, and it will be talked about. If I'm watching another series and I see his numbers, I'm like, oh boy, he's not going, you know. And but you know, we're here every day and we see what he's doing, and that's why we switched it up a little bit to sort of see if that could help. We're trying to give him ideas in the power play. And I think our power play has been effective for the most part. It scored goals for us. Both games we won, it was a big factor. One of the games we lost, we didn't get one, so it's irrelevant. Game three, I'd say, yeah, we could have finished better on it, but I still thought we generated. So all that part of the game, he's been good on the kill. You know, it just hasn't quite come together. So that's it, Jack, stay with it. I guess that's how we, you know, don't, no one's down on you. Keep playing, push through. And that's it, it'll turn, you know, hopefully it'll turn for him. In terms of the puck finding him a little more. He's a competitor, and he ain't going anywhere, right? Just hopefully that he gets a little puck luck. Sometimes, like Theo the other day, right? He scores a goal early, man, the guy's lights out the rest of the day. Sometimes that's all you need, a little weight off your shoulder. They're human too, right? So that's probably what Jack needs. There's something good to go his way early on. I think you'll see a little bit of what happened to Theo.
Playoffs, you have these big momentum swings. Do you believe they carry game to game, or with 6:30 tomorrow, do you start over again, fresh?
Start over. I think if you're most of the teams that have been there know, right? It's now we'd like to take advantage of it on our end and see if we can put them on their heels early on. But I mean, there'll be 2 days between games, and I'm sure they'll just revisit what they've done well against us and say, hey, let's just get back to that. You know. I don't know how much they'll scrutinize the game. That's up to them. But as I say, I don't think it affects you a lot, and that's why it does go back and forth. I mean, if momentum were everything, then you'd see a lot more. You'd see less swings, right? I just think most teams put it behind them. I think as coaches, we have to do. That's one of the tasks you got to do right away is try to put the game behind you, no matter what happened, and you know, tweak here or there, and just get your team ready.
Term was half-court offense going into the series. Has there been less room than even you expected between the blue lines?
Well, there's room. It's you got it. There's room on the outside a little bit. We've done a good job with getting through there. I mean, the game at home we lost were both rush goals through the neutral zone. They just don't happen directly off the rush. I think it was Sad drove through the neutral zone wide, went all the way around the net, had a little play with Petro, a scissor play, and it gets to Hurdle. So it wasn't Sad going directly to the net because it was an odd man. It was a rush that just took a little longer to develop. So there is room. It's the odd man rush game that's not there a lot because people reload better and they make better decisions with the puck, so you're not turning them over as much. That's what you lose a little bit in playoffs. So room between the blues is there, but it's just not through the middle of the ice with numbers, typically. And that's how the challenges of creating offense from that with equal numbers. So that's what we've talked about a lot, and I thought we've been doing a better job driving the puck deep and then spreading them out from there. And whether that keeps resulting in more goals in the ozone, we'll see. Or any goals, or however it works out, more chances. That's what we'd like to. You got to generate offense somehow, right? And it can't all be, well, it can be, I guess, sorry. You can throw pucks behind them all night, forecheck all night, every entry, or you can try to gain access and keep possession. But how are you going to do that, and where's the offense come from there? We're trying to balance that because we've always been a team that's, there's these analytics like entry versus denials and all that. We're a good entry team. So we don't want to just give that up, Darren, because the team backs off a bit. Let's find different ways. And maybe not score on the rush, but get our entries and then at least have possession where we don't have to forecheck and get it back all the time. That could work. It worked. And we scored the overtime goal like that, right? They won the faceoff with forecheck. Teams make mistakes, but we want it to be a balance.
Barbashev scored some huge goals for you, and I'm curious what makes him a big moment player. And as a coach, can you look at players and say, I know that guy's always going to be there because of who he is?
Well, he scores big goals because usually, like, he's got the ability to get to the inside ice, right? He's willing to go there. And that's usually where big goals scored. Rarely are you going to come down the wing and pull a 1979 Guy Lafleur drop pass big goal to tie the game against the Bruins, right? Like, those just don't, you know, it's more inside. You got to get inside. You got to get a bounce. You got to get a break. And he's willing to do that. So that's one thing. And he does have good offensive instincts. Even though he's a physical player and a forecheck guy, he's got good hands, so He's got it in him. Some guys just have the ability to have fine pucks and a little composure. He's got that.
Update yesterday, by the way. I was not here.
Just trying to, you know.
Appreciate that. I was on the flight. Today you were working on entries a little bit on the power play. What didn't go right in the last game on that?
Well, we had some good entries, and there was a couple of power plays where it seemed like we got stalled trying to gain access with possession at the blue line. So we just tried to tweak a little bit of that. Okay, here's what they're doing. Here's some other options that you use periodically during the year, but not all that. They're not our go-to. Maybe these need to be built in a little more. So that's what we were trying to do. As I said, we've had some good entries, and then there's been pockets where we haven't been as clean. We're just trying to fix the areas we're not as clean. And a little bit of that is pace. Come and make sure we're coming with a lot of pace. They do a good job defending the blue line. They have people up. They tend not to sag there, so you got to make a good play. As you get over the red line towards the blue line, you got to be in sync, right, because they're pretty tight there, and that's kind of what we're revisiting.
You guys have gotten a lot of shots on that the past couple of games, but also a lot of block shots against you. Do you feel, are you happy with the way the puck is coming off the stick, how fast it's coming off, or is that something you want to work on a little bit more heading into the next game?
Well, we did do a better job of, when your shots get blocked, typically they have a lot of people in the slot or near the net, and then they can be blocked with a stick, it can be blocked with layers, so we're trying to a little bit stretch their defense out so that the lanes open up a little more. I thought we did a better job with that. Games 3 and 4 were starting to come a little more, and guys are getting it. So I think we're getting there. If you have enough shot attempts, a good team like Minnesota, like us, is going to block a lot of shots. That's just how they play. Their D tend to stay close to the net, so they're going to get in the way. So we know we're going to have to deal with that. That's how we've tried to overcome it. And I thought our offensive numbers, and they backed it up for the stuff we do, were the best for game 4. So we're trending well in that. Now, I know we had an overtime, so there's extra period, but in general, they averaged out better.
Just the fact that you won game 4 to make it a 2-2 series and not a 1-3 deficit, but the fashion in which the team did it with an emotional last-second overtime win, how does that maybe recapture some confidence or even magic that was absent game 2 and game 3?
Well, you get some juice from that, there's no doubt. It's a big swing in the series. And after that, that's it. It's back to work. Guys have been through some, you know, tight series here before. Going back to Gosha's question, the momentum, you know, we know that they're going to be ready to go in game 5. They're not going to overthink game 4 because it didn't go their way. Just like in game 3, we didn't panic or, hey, you know what, let's get ready for game 4 and take care of that. I know it's, you can't look ahead. You just can't. You got one game in front of you. You got to go out and do your best to win it. And if you don't, well, you got to win the net. You know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of that you're not thinking big picture, well, we're going to build our game for 2 weeks from now. You know, it's more now you get a little more singular focus on it. It's game 5. And that's why you see line changes. You see some of the minutes in the series. If you watch other series, how little some guys are playing, how, you know, because it's, you're just worried about the next game. Now, I do believe you have to have a little bit of an eye on, depending on where you are in the series, but now it's getting in. It's 2 out of 3, right? So, you know, it gets a little more, hey, what's going on in the moment? I got to take care of whatever's going on in the moment as a coach, as opposed to worried about, hey, we're building our game with 4 lines. Like, now it could shrink a little bit because of where we are.
Bruce, you know, all 4 series in the Western Conference are tied 2-2 after four games. What does that kind of say about how tough this West has been?
Parity. And I think that, you know, the East is, what is there, a few 3-1s. Now, that can happen anyway, but I think this year, I don't want to speak out of turn, I think the West is a little stronger than the East, and that happens from year to year, the East. And I think it shows in the playoff series. Now, the Eastern guys are going to hate me for saying that, but it just, I think, listen, if they tell me 2 years from now the East is a little better than the West and the series are like that, I'd have a hard time making an argument with them, right? Because that's what it appears to me. But, I mean, even the East, I look at the Montreal-Washington, they're close games. There's some overtime, you know, so it's and that's probably the largest discrepancy of points, right, in the series. And they're still, even though it's 3-1, it's been tight. So that's the NHL. Once you're in, it's tight. And that's certainly the case in the West.
From his media availability at City National Arena after practice today as the team returned to the ice, worked on, among other things, some special teams and the power play transition and gaining entry, which was a really good job by Minnesota to be able to stack up at the blue line and make that difficult. My favorite answer was when he talked about the neutral zone and there being some room if you go wide, but then took it to 5-on-5, and it was one of the most incredible breakdowns I've heard from a semi-basic question about is there more or less room than you anticipated coming into the series, and that's the joy and the greatness of having to be able to be around Bruce Cassidy.
Just the idea of looking at transition opportunities in a little bit of a different way, right? Like, a lot of times we think about it as odd man rushes and not so much about how you can kind of take care of transition and extend the play in the offensive zone. And he kind of walked us through that hurdle goal in game number two as kind of a representation of looks off the rush, but it taking a little bit longer to materialize and getting to it in a different light, in a different way. It's fantastic. Not to mention, you know, Bruce Cassidy kind of reminding everybody that just through four games, if you're looking at a player, their stat line through four games, it's not indicative of what they could potentially do over the course of a full run.
The Marchessault example, right?
Yep. Recalling Jonathan Marchessault, who did not pick up his first goal of the playoffs until game three, round two of that Stanley Cup championship run.
Yeah, something that we are not privy to, but talking about Jack Eichel being more vocal and physical. Mm-hmm. We can see the physical part, but more vocal on the bench through the course of the game is also encouraging. And just in and around the turbulence of a series and yet still very calm and very reflective and very explanatory through the course of it. Block shots, like that was early on in the series a major storyline. It backed off a little bit. Vegas has done a much better job in getting shots through, and you saw it with the approaching 50 shots on net yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the Golden Knights have certainly kind of found their rhythm in a sense in the offensive zone, and the shots have certainly started to get more and more into the crease area, into the middle of the ice with Filip Gustavsson. But I think it's been more, from my perspective, the Golden Knights' ability to get into that area of the ice and get secondary chances. Like, they have done a much better job of, you know, finding pucks, getting rebound opportunities, rebound looks. And, you know, the Nick Waugh power play goal is kind of part and parcel with that. They were able to put four shots on goal in that sequence. It was the fourth shot that went in, but they were hunting down rebounds in those moments. And I think that's been a big change for the Golden Knights in certainly in game four.
There's rebounds there from Gustavsson.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something that I've learned in watching him much closely, more closely than normal. There's opportunities around. Good goaltender, but there's pucks that are available. Let's call it that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's on the Golden Knights to get there, to get to them, and to kind of put them back on Gustavsson to challenge him that way. And again, I think they did a better job of that in game four, and it's a big reason why they were able to put four goals behind them.
Want to have a chance to give us your thoughts? We'll open up the phone lines for a little bit, just a five-minute period coming up in the middle of one-timers. From around the National Hockey League, on the way on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers.
One-Timers.
A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
Got a couple of things we have to get to before we open up the phone lines. Tampa Bay and Florida playing game four, the last series to get to a fourth game in this first round, and Florida scored first. Tampa Bay responded with two goals in 11 seconds and lead their state rival by a goal. A win by Tampa will tie the series up at two after four games. It's been a fun series. At times, it felt like it took a while to get going, but the one suspension hit and the other one that was right on the line seems to have brought some life to the series.
Yeah, I mean, big hits on big players, key players on both sides. Obviously, the Hagel hit on Barkov got tempers going a bit. And then Tkachuk on Gensel. Tkachuk just under the threshold of supplemental discipline. That is as Matthew Tkachuk a play as you're going to find. And now we're in a pretty good game here in game number four.
Road team has won all three games so far. Avalanche and Stars will play game five tonight. That series is deadlocked at two wins apiece. The Stars with home ice advantage tonight. Was wondering about the future of Mike Sullivan all along. And I kept being told, he's got a contract. He's got a contract. Well, Mike Sullivan wants to win. He's not really interested in the rebuild. A couple of cups. He's done. He's put in the time already. Now he wants to win more hockey. So mutual parting of the ways with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So the Pittsburgh Penguins, now the seventh organization with a coaching vacancy in the National Hockey League right now, and Mike Sullivan becomes the hottest commodity available for the six other teams. I don't know whether it's the Rangers that he signs with or Anaheim makes a pitch for him, but he's also the Olympic coach for Team USA, so if he does take a step back for a year, he's got that on his plate. But Mike Sullivan is available, so probably be Sullivan, Joel Quenneville, and then you've got a bunch of names that are all hoping. Rick Tocchet, too. He's basically a free agent right now, even though he hasn't told Vancouver what he's going to do. He's talked about Anaheim, looked at Anaheim. So there's three really strong candidates, and then a group of others that you could see going in a different direction. David Carl, where does he end up, the coach of the University of Denver, the Pioneers, on that side of it. So some transactions regarding coaches. Now let's get to the phone lines, 876-1340. Let's go to Mike on line three. Mike, glad we could squeeze you in.
Well, I appreciate it. What was John Cooper ranting and raving about on that second goal? His team just scored twice in 11 seconds.
Did not see it, to be honest.
I think I saw it. He's happy, Mike. He's excited.
That was
happy?
Because
they just scored two goals. Yeah. There's okay. There's a fist pump and everything. Like,
I didn't see his face looking happy to me. I don't. You saw it better than I did then. Okay. Let's get that out of the way. Let's ask the question that I prepared here. That is, Carolina played, yesterday. Yesterday. Now, they have the best, we have one weakness on this team that I see, and that's the penalty kill. They have the best penalty kill in the NHL. Do you think our coaches took a look at what Carolina does differently than we do or not?
I think coaches watch video all year of other teams. The top teams, whether it's penalty kill or power play or with the extra attacker out, coaches will constantly be using that video to pick up on different advantages that they can steal. The world is a copycat world. And if you're not delving into that, then you're doing yourself a disservice. So I don't know whether it's something that they can take advantage of right now, but I don't think anything Carolina is doing would be surprising to the Golden Knights.
And Ryan, thank you for your time today. That's all.
What happened? You guys have a good catch up at the rink?
Yeah,
it was a nice chat.
Oh yeah,
nice chat.
What did you guys talk about?
Well, Ryan and I discussed Zeev Bilyum, who we don't agree on, one thing.
Sounds like Bilyum's going to come out of the lineup.
Well, he should. He's in over his head right now. And we both agree on one thing. He's going to be a star in this league. Right now, he's just in over his head.
The biggest impact is the power play. We had this conversation, the group of us today, and he's an offensive guy. It just doesn't look like he's playing with the alpha dog mentality that makes him such a special player on the power play. And if he's not going to do that, and you can only play him 7 minutes a game, take a step back. I'm impressed that he went in, but he got baptized in the first couple of games.
He sure did. And like, I guess the point is, like, if you have him in the lineup, he's on your power play. And if you get a power play in overtime, but you're not going to trust him in that scenario to put him out there on that power play, then you have to take a look at the bigger picture. My argument with Booyam is this. He is thrust into a playoff series as his introduction to the National Hockey League against a team in the Golden Knights that won a Stanley Cup 2 years ago. How he looks and how he fares over these first three or four games of playoff hockey against Vegas is not an indication of what he is or isn't going to be over the course of his career. And I think for Minnesota, you put him in the lineup to see what he can do at this level against this competition and what he can do for your power play that over the course of the year was middling at best. Now we've got four games of sample size. I wouldn't be surprised one way or another how they deal with Booyam if he's in or out. Sounds like now he's going to be out. And to me, that makes sense, especially if you're not going to put him in power play scenarios when the games tighten up a little bit more.
Appreciate it, Mike. Connor Hellebuck, Darcy Kemper, Andre Vasilevsky named the Vezina finalists. No big surprises or omissions on that list. Vasilevsky was great this year, bounce-back season for him. Darcy Kemper's numbers brilliant in being reacquired by the Los Angeles Kings, and Connor Hellebuck will win the award and should be in contention for the MVP by leading all the main statistical categories for goaltenders, like ran the table. But he's got bigger things on his mind. It helps him that this comes out at a time in the series where he's struggled against the St. Louis Blues and been pulled in back-to-back games. It's a nice little reminder, hey, you're great. I know Connor a little bit. He doesn't lack confidence and can certainly look at a situation through the eyes of being confident. And I would not doubt for a second that he would use this to his advantage mentally.
I think he's going to be fine. And I think Winnipeg, they're going to be fine. I know that it was pretty brutal over games 3 and 4. Good on St. Louis for, you know, taking care of their home ice advantage. I know things are going to be tight for Winnipeg going into game 5. But, I mean, Connor Hellebuck this year was outstanding, otherworldly in terms of goaltenders around the league. And I don't think that he's lost it. I don't think that 2 games are going to be kind of the be-all, end-all of his season. And given how last year went, given how the year before went for Hellebuck, I think he needs to rise to the level of the challenge. And that's going to be the story of his season. How does he respond in game 5? Generally speaking, Winnipeg, every time this year that they've had a need to answer a question, they've done it. I see no reason to believe they can't do it here in game 5.
Yeah, I don't disagree there, except there isn't a person up in that part of the country, part of the continent, that's saying they're fine. They're going to be fine. You are speaking a very different language, even though it's the same language, than the folks up there are speaking.
Listen, I understand that line of thinking. Like, we do a show with Chris Chapman, who's the most reactionary person to games and wins and losses that I've ever met before in my entire life. But I just believe the body of work from Winnipeg this year has been really solid. And I know that it's starting to look very similar to what it's been the last couple of years for them. But at some point, you got to break out of it. And if I feel differently, if I feel differently about the Leafs this year, I can feel differently about Winnipeg.
Well, the Leafs aren't through it either.
Come on. They'll be fine.
You throw around, they'll be fine, like 10-cent pieces. I'm not sure that's totally accurate. And other than Chapman being the most reactionary person in our universe.
Yeah.
Right, Chapman?
The collective.
You guys are like full of it today.
See,
the collective.
I told you that he's reactionary.
The collective Winnipeg and Toronto anxiety is honestly one of the
funniest things. No, it's well earned.
I'm sure. Yeah, you're right. It is. But, like, it is one of the funniest things in the world to me. More so on the Toronto side than the Winnipeg side, because they didn't get the sweep, and now you're starting
to... Toronto is 1-12 in their last 13 elimination games.
I know that.
Don't tell them they're fine.
They're fine. Those elimination games were against Boston.
And Winnipeg has seen this go south numerous times.
I'm sorry.
With the goaltender. That's not fine.
I love the Ottawa Senators, but the Ottawa Senators are not the Boston Bruins.
Or the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Or the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, I'm sorry.
It'll hurt even more then.
Okay. And listen, if they blow a 3-0 series lead to the Ottawa Senators and they go 1-15 in elimination games, then... yeah, you're right. Beyond that, after this season, there's no scenario ever that's going to be fine for them. But against Ottawa, their first go-around in the postseason with this core and this team, they'll get the job done. They'll
be
fine.
You know what I didn't realize? Toronto had a 2-0 series lead for the first time since Ty Domi was part of the team.
Your buddy.
And now his son is scoring goals for them.
Yeah. That big reason why they had a 2-0 series lead.
A long time ago. Catching up with the reactionary Chris Chapman on Fox Sports Las Vegas. That's next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So, got to give credit to Dave Gosher for this one, because at the start of overtime... the other day, he said that the Golden Knights have won 9 overtime playoff games and have had 9 different goal scorers in those playoff games. Well, now they have a 10th overtime win in the playoffs and a 10th different goal scorer. So I was curious to see who they were and how many I would have gotten right. And I knew that Eric Halla scored the very first, which was a double overtime game winner against the LA Kings in the second playoff game the Golden Knights ever played. William Karlsson, Alex Tuck, Riley Smith, Mark Stone, Nick Waugh, Michael Amadio, Brett Howden, Chandler Stephenson, and now Ivan Barbashev. So those are the 10. I was so interested in finding out and seeing who they were that I had to go back and look it up. But without Dave Gosher throwing that little nugget in there, it's something I never would have even thought of and never would have known. And I don't remember the Karlsson one. I do remember the Halla one. I remember the Amadio one.
The Karlsson one was San Jose.
Alex Tuck had the big one. I think that was Mark Stone had one against Colorado. Nick Waugh scored one against Montreal. And Amadio's was Winnipeg. I remember that. Howden, was it Dallas he scored?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and Stephenson, I think, was that also against Dallas?
So when you looked this up, you didn't look to see where they scored the goals?
You didn't check the games?
Well, I did, but I didn't write that part down.
Crunch?
I was, yeah.
You said, I was so excited to look. I thought I had to find out who they were. And
well, because I'm looking at the names, and now I'm trying to think of what. Yeah, I remember the Amadio one. That was a big one against Winnipeg. That was the moment where I felt like they were going to win the cup.
Off air, you said, I'm excited. This is a good one today.
It is a good one.
You looked up the players and forgot the games in which they scored the goals.
And that started walking us through it without knowing it.
No, I knew most of them.
I knew most of them.
I knew most of
That's
them.
That's what your kid tells you when they got 65 on the test. I knew most of it.
I was so close to passing.
My kid doesn't do that.
Never fail to entertain us. Right, Christopher?